Ever find yourself scrolling through economic news, inflation this, job numbers that, and just thinking, okay, where does all this stuff actually come from?
Yeah, it can feel a bit abstract, can't it? Like it just appears.
Exactly. But, well, underneath all that financial jargon, there are some really fundamental ingredients, sort of the basic building blocks that make the whole economic engine work.
That's a great analogy. It's like knowing the components inside your phone, not just the apps on the screen.
Right. And understanding those core components makes everything else make, well, a lot more sense.
And today, that's exactly what we're doing. We're kind of peeling back those layers to look at those fundamental ingredients, the real recipe for everything produced from, I don't know, your coffee this morning to the fanciest new tech gadget.
Perfect. And you, our listener, you actually shared some interesting material on this very topic, these factors of production. So our mission today is to really unpack these ideas for you.
Yeah, get into the weeds a bit.
So you walk away with a really clear, insightful grasp of what they are, and maybe more importantly, why they actually matter day to day. We're talking land, labor, capital, and enterprise. We'll nail down what each one really means in economics.
And we're not just stopping at definitions. No, we'll dig into some key distinctions, like the difference between, say, human capital, your skills, your knowledge, and physical capital, the actual tools and machines. That's
Oh,
crucial.
definitely.
We'll also look at the rewards each factor gets. Why does labor get wages? Why does capital earn interest? And, we'll touch on how dividing up work, specialization can massively boost efficiency.
But also maybe the downsides of that too.
Exactly, the potential pitfalls. And we definitely need to talk about the entrepreneur. Their role is just huge.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
Okay, let's dive right in then. What exactly are these factors of production we keep mentioning?
Okay, so at their core, they're simply the essential inputs, the things you absolutely need to create any good or service. Economists usually lump them into four main buckets. The first one, land.
Right. And land in economics isn't just like a field you can buy, is it? It's broader than that.
Much broader. Yeah, absolutely. Land covers all natural resources. So, yes, the physical ground, the surface of the earth, but also everything underneath it, mineral deposits, oil, gas.
Like lithium for batteries, maybe?
Perfect example. And also water resources, forests for timber, even things like the climate itself, which is obviously vital for farming.
Okay.
What's interesting is that land is often seen as, well, a passive factor. It's just there. It's necessary, often essential, but it doesn't actively do the producing itself.
And it's often fixed, right? You can't just make more land.
Yeah.
And sometimes it runs out non-renewable.
Precisely. And the payment, the reward for using that land or its resources is rent.
Got it. So land, nature's contribution. What's next? Labor. That feels a bit more straightforward.
Labor, yes. This is all human effort that goes into production, and that means both physical and mental effort.
Ah, okay. So building a house is labor.
Physical
But
work.
designing the house or maybe coding software, that's labor too.
Exactly. Mental labor, the cognitive effort, both count. Unlike land, labor is very much an active factor. It's directly involved in creating things. And the reward for labor, as we all know, is wages.
And those wages vary a lot, obviously, depending on skills, experience, how much demand there is.
Absolutely. All those market forces come into play.
Okay, that makes sense. Land, labor. Next is capital. Now, this is where I think people sometimes get mixed up between the everyday meaning and the economic one.
That's a really common point of confusion, yeah.
Yeah.
It's important to clarify. In economics, when we say capital, we mean man-made resources used to produce other goods and services.
So, not money itself.
Not directly, no. Financial capital money is obviously important, but it's used to acquire the productive capital. We're talking about the actual machinery in a factory, a carpenter's tools, office buildings, delivery vans.
The physical things that help us make more things.
Precisely. Think of it like this. Money buys the pizza oven. But the oven itself is the physical capital that actually bakes the pizza. And capital is critical because it generally makes labor more productive.
Right. One person with a bulldozer can move way more earth than someone with just a shovel.
Exactly. It amplifies human effort. And the reward, the payment for providing or lending that capital is interest.
And can we break capital down further? Like some capital lasts a long time, some gets used up.
Yes, that's a useful distinction. We often talk about fixed capital, the durable stuff used repeatedly, like that factory building or a big computer server.
Okay.
And then there's working capital. That's more like the raw materials, the components, the stuff that gets used up or transformed in the production process itself.
Gotcha. Okay, land, labor, capital. That leaves enterprise or entrepreneurship. This always feels a bit fuzzier. Like the secret ingredient.
It is a bit more conceptual, you're right. But you could argue it's the spark plug, the catalyst that actually brings the other three factors together and gets things moving.
So what is it exactly?
Enterprise is about the willingness and the ability, mind you, to take risks, to make those big strategic decisions, to coordinate land, labor, and capital effectively to produce something people might want.
So it's the person spotting an opportunity.
Yes, yeah. The innovator. The person who sees a gap in the market, like maybe spotting the need for a new app or a better way to deliver groceries, and then actually does something about it, they take the initiative.
And they take the risk, right? It might not work out.
That's absolutely key. They bear the uncertainty. Will the business succeed? Will people buy the product? And the reward for taking that risk, for organizing everything, for innovating, that's profit.
So they're not just mixing the ingredients, they're choosing the recipe and taking the heat if the cake flops.
That's a perfect way to put it. Now, you mentioned earlier the difference between human and physical capital, and that's worth digging into a bit more. It's so important for understanding, well, how economies actually grow.
Yeah, because capital often just makes you picture factories, machines.
Yeah.
The tangible stuff.
Mm.
But people skills, their knowledge.
Mm.
That human capital seems incredibly valuable, maybe even more so now.
Totally agree. Human capital is intangible. It's inside us, right? It's the sum of our skills, our education, any training we've had, our health, our experience, all the things that make us more productive.
So a skilled surgeon's ability or a programmer's coding knowledge,
yeah,
that's their human capital.
Exactly. And investing in that through good schools, healthcare, job training is fundamental. It leads to more efficiency, more innovation, and ultimately stronger economic growth in the long run.
And physical capital, like we said, is the tangible stuff you can, well, kick. The machines, tools, buildings, roads, internet cables.
Right. Your laptop is physical capital. Your ability to use it effectively for work, that's your human capital.
Okay. So tangible versus intangible. Any other key differences?
Well, think about wear and tear. Physical capital usually depreciates. Machines get old, they break down, buildings need repairs. Human capital, though, it can actually appreciate. Your skills can improve with experience, with more learning. You get better at your job over time, hopefully.
Good point. And people can move jobs, learn new things. Physical capital is often stuck in one place or built for one specific task.
Generally, yes. Human capital tends to be more mobile, more adaptable. Physical capital can be quite specialized and geographically fixed.
Makes sense. Okay, so we've defined the factors. We've distinguished between human and physical capital. Let's talk rewards again. We touched on them, but why are rent, wages, interest, and profit so fundamental?
Right. So each factor contributes and each gets a reward in return. Land gets rent, labor gets wages, capital gets interest, and enterprise, the risk-taking bit, gets profit.
And these aren't just random payments, they're incentives, right? They drive the whole system.
Absolutely critical point. They are powerful incentives. They encourage people to offer their labor, save and invest to create capital, make their land available, or take the plunge and start a business. If the potential rewards weren't there or weren't attractive enough,
then maybe less land would be used productively. Fewer people would work those difficult jobs, less capital would be available, and fewer people would risk starting businesses.
Precisely. These rewards are how resources get allocated in a market economy. They signal where factors are needed most.
Okay. Now, shifting gears slightly, how do we get more out of the labor we have?
Yeah.
This brings us to division of labor. Specialization.
Yes, exactly. This is a concept that goes way back, but it's incredibly powerful. Division of labor is basically breaking down a complex production process into smaller, distinct tasks.
Like an assembly line.
The classic example. One person does one specific job, the next person does the next, and so on. Specialization is related. It's when individuals or firms or even whole countries focus on producing what they're relatively best at, what they have an advantage in.
So instead of everyone trying to be a jack of all trades, you get experts. Some focuses on welding, someone on painting, someone on software.
Right. And the benefits, well, they can be huge for productivity. First, repetition makes perfect, or at least much faster. Workers doing one task get really good and quick at it.
Okay, increased skill.
Second, you save time. No switching between different tools or operations constantly. Third, it fosters real expertise. People become specialists in their little area.
And maybe it leads to lower costs if you're making tons of one thing efficiently.
Yes, economies of scale often kick in. Producing more can lower the average cost per item. And sometimes focusing intensely on one step can lead to innovations finding slightly better ways to do that specific task.
Sounds pretty great.
Yeah.
But Are there downsides? Can you specialize too much?
Oh, definitely. There are potential drawbacks. One big one is just monotony. Doing the same tiny repetitive task all day, every day. That can be incredibly boring and demoralizing for workers.
Yeah, I can imagine. Job satisfaction takes a hit.
For sure. Another risk is overdependence. If your whole production line relies on each specialized step, what happens if there's a problem in just one small part?
The whole thing grinds to a halt, like a missing link in a chain.
Exactly. It can make the system fragile. There's also less flexibility. If you've only ever done one very specific task, it might be harder to adapt if your job changes or disappears.
And maybe less creativity overall, if everyone's just focused on their tiny piece of the puzzle.
That's an argument some make, yeah. Reduced opportunity for broader problem solving or seeing the bigger picture. So, like many things in economics,
it's a trade-off. Finding the right balance.
Precisely. Maximize the efficiency gains without sacrificing too much worker well-being or resilience.
Okay, now let's circle back to the entrepreneur. We define them as the risk taker, the organizer. But their role in today's economy feels, well, even more central somehow.
I think that's right. In our modern, fast-paced, globalized world, entrepreneurs are arguably the key drivers of economic change and progress. They're not just passively managing resources. They're the ones making the active decisions.
What to make, how to make it, who to sell it to.
All of that. They're constantly scanning the horizon, adapting, deciding. And again, crucially, they bear the risk. They put their own money, their time, their reputation on the line. Failure is a very real possibility.
And they're often the source of genuine innovation, right? Not just managing, but creating something new.
Absolutely. They're the innovators. They introduce new products people didn't even know they needed, or new services, or find radically more efficient ways of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
Think about, well, almost any major technological shift.
Smartphones, streaming services, electric vehicles.
Driven by entrepreneurial vision and risk-taking. And let's not forget, they are massive job creators. New businesses mean new employment opportunities.
And they find new markets, too.
Yes, they identify unmet needs, sometimes even create entirely new markets, expanding economic activity domestically and often internationally as well.
It really feels like with everything changing so fast, technology, global connections, you need that entrepreneurial energy for an economy to stay competitive and adapt.
Mm, you absolutely do. In today's world, they are essential for helping economies navigate change, boost productivity through new methods, and compete effectively on the global stage. That's why you see so many governments trying to foster entrepreneurship, you know, offering support, funding, trying to create environments where new ventures can flourish.
Because they recognize it's fundamental for growth and dynamism.
Exactly. It's seen as key to sustainable economic progress.
Okay, fantastic. So let's try and quickly summarize the key takeaways from this deep dive. We've got the four factors: land, all natural resources,
labor, human effort, mental and physical,
capital, the man-made tools and resources used for production,
and enterprise, the crucial element of risk-taking, organization, and innovation.
We also stress that vital difference between human capital, our skills, knowledge, health, and physical capital, the machines and buildings.
Right, and each factor earns a reward: rent for land, wages for labor, interest for capital, and profit for enterprise. These aren't just payments, they're essential incentives driving economic activity.
We looked at how dividing labor and specializing can boost efficiency dramatically,
but also carries risks like monotony, fragility, and reduced flexibility.
And finally, we really highlighted the absolutely critical role of the entrepreneur in modern economies. The organizer, decision maker, risk bearer, innovator, and job creator.
Phew, we covered a lot of ground. Hopefully this has given you, our listener, a much clearer picture of these core economic concepts.
Yeah, a framework maybe for understanding how all the goods and services around us actually come into being and the forces shaping our economy.
It helps decode some of that economic news, hopefully.
Definitely. So the next time you hear about productivity figures or investment levels, you'll have a better sense of the underlying factors at play. And maybe just one final thought for you to mull over.
Oh, go on.
With automation and AI developing so rapidly, how might the roles, the importance of these traditional factors of production change in the future? Could labor become less critical in some areas? Will a new factor, maybe data or AI itself, become paramount?
That is a huge question. How does AI fit into land, labor, capital, enterprise? Or is it something new altogether?
Exactly. Something fascinating to think about as we watch the economy continue to evolve.